Well, if we haven't already met, my name's Robin, and I'm one of the pastors here, and I'd love to meet you. Love to put a face to a name. I usually hang out in the atrium after, so please stop by and just introduce yourself. Question for you. How much time did you spend waiting this week? Now, you probably don't want to think about that because, you know, I don't know about you, but not many of us like waiting. I'm really lousy at it. Timex did a study in 2022. And here's what they found out. Now, based on an average lifespan, average city in North America, we spend 38 hours a year, that's almost a full work week, waiting in traffic. 38 hours waiting in traffic. More if you live in a big city. 13 hours a year, this one really stings. 13 hours a year or 43 days of your life on hold for a customer service agent, usually to no avail. And I think it's gone up since 2022. 3 days a year standing in line somewhere, probably doesn't even include a drive-through. 3 days a year in line. And 21 minutes per week waiting on that significant other to get ready. Some households think it's a bit more. But there you go. Waiting isn't something we enjoy. It's not something we value. As I said, I'm really lousy at it. It feels like a nuisance. It feels like a waste of time. So it may surprise you that today marks the beginning of a season of waiting, or at least a season of acknowledging a waiting. And that's the season of Advent. For the next 24 days, we are going to wait in anticipation for Christmas Day. Waiting, expectant, preparing, maybe over-preparing. You see, Advent marks the beginning of a sacred calendar, of the Christian calendar. It's a way of marking time differently. Don't worry, it's not like some fringe thing that we're not following the regular calendar, January 1 to December 31. No. It's just a way that the church marks the year. And it begins with waiting. It begins with longing, not with the pop the champagne, new year, new me. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the Christian calendar reorients us as a people to a different way of being in the world. It's very countercultural, as you can imagine. Our society careens into Christmas, don't we? The minute Thanksgiving's over, the stores are decked out, the advertisers are in full swing with all the glittery gear, we're drawn into celebration and revelry, and this girl from the city meets this guy from the country, and Hallmark debuts another nail biter. That's how we careen into Christmas. But Advent is perched on the precipice of a sobering reality. That life is not as it should be. The world is groaning and yearning for something else, for rescue, for reversal, for the inbreaking of peace and joy and hope and love, for justice and equity, for life as God intended it. Fleming Rutledge is a pastor and theologian and author and scholar, and she says this: Advent is there because the church is not afraid to look into the dark and to say, this is a dark world, but in the midst of this darkness, God happens. God happens in spite of ourselves. Yes, God happens. God shows up in the darkness, in the pain and in the confusion. And the whole Bible is a record of God doing just that. And the Christmas story is nothing but God doing just that. Just as Jesus is the face of God, the perfect representation of God, the Christmas story is how God came, and it is the perfect representation of how God works in the world. If we wonder how God works, we look at the Christmas story. And while God has already come, we know that. We celebrate that every year, 2,000 years ago. Jesus, God in the flesh, the long-awaited Savior and rescuer, was already born. But we are still waiting for the ultimate fulfillment of all that he embodied, aren't we? For this kingdom of Jesus's, this economy, this rule that he inaugurated to come, life is still not as it should be. And we continue to wait for God's promise of restoration to be complete. And amidst the hurry of a secularized Christmas season, the gift of Advent is that it instills in us a quiet slowness of the soul, a stillness that doesn't come naturally. It needs cultivating. And so I invite you over these next 24 days in this season of Advent, this season of waiting, to take inventory of your life. Where are you still waiting for God to break in? Where do you need God to break in? Where do you need God to happen in your life and in your world? Or where may God be trying to break in? And you've put up a wall, or you're afraid, or you're hesitant. Where does God need to break in? Where does God need to happen in your life? Can we walk this Advent journey together over the next 24 days? Each year we light a candle. Different traditions do it differently, but the Advent candle just reminds us that God breaks in to our darkness. Sometimes it's just a little light, but it always amazes me how much light one little candle can give off in the midst of the darkness. You know, in the midst of this happy, clappy glow of Christmas, Advent calls us to something much deeper, to honesty, and invites us into a different rhythm. It invites us to peer into the darkness, and it gives us permission to not have to pretend that everything is okay, to not have to have that smile on all the time. It also allows us to acknowledge the world as it is, not the world as we wish it were, or life as it is, not as we wish it were. You see, Christmas, if it is Christmas, is for those sitting in the rubble of Gaza, the burned-out buildings of Ukraine, the starving of Sudan, the hospital waiting rooms around the globe. If Christmas isn't for the wounded and the weary, it's not for anyone. That's the point of the Christmas story. Hope for everyone. It has to be hope for everyone, or it isn't hope for anyone. Oppression and longing was the setting of the first Christmas. Just as God's people long ago were under the boot of a ruthless empire, crushed under the weight of economic and foreign occupation, waiting with aching hope for this promised Messiah, we too still wait. The world waits. We anticipate that day when everything broken is going to be mended, when everything wrong will be reversed and restored, when the world will finally be made whole. And I imagine even as I say these words, there are faces that come to mind. People in your lives, maybe yourself, that are struggling, that are waiting. Maybe in hope, maybe without hope. But Christmas is hope for everyone. The world will finally be whole. And that day, that great turning of history was set in motion on the very first Christmas when hope took on flesh. The hopes and fears of all the years were met, and the restoration of all things began in the small, in the unseen, in the unexpected. And that's still how God works. You know, we strive for the big, don't we? I could say we kind of worship the big. We're enamored by glamour and power. But God gives us Christmas to remind us how God works. It's the story of reversal. The people, the places, the circumstances, the whole story all pulse with this great reversal. God in the belly of a nobody from nowhere with nothing amidst the smell of manure. God's arrival in a fear-filled, economically oppressed town in the backwoods of nowhere. A town of contradiction and contrast. This is Bethlehem, Ephrata, not quietly blanketed in the soft glow of Christmas, but a town that's restless with dreamless sleep, a town at the intersection of hope and fear, a town of contradiction and reversal. Bethlehem Ephratah is this ancient town that dates back years, thousands of years, to the days of Abraham, thousands of years before Jesus. It was the birthplace of Israel's most beloved king, King David. And that town held significance in the imaginations of the Hebrew people, not just because their favorite king was born there, but because Bethlehem Ephratah held a promise. When the Babylonians destroyed the towns of Israel and burned them to the ground in the 6th century BCE, probably looked a lot like the scenes we see of Gaza today. There was nothing left. Families were separated. The strong and the young women were taken as slaves. Others were slaughtered, and their future looked hopeless. And in the midst of all of this anguish and sorrow, they clung to a promise that was given by God a century before, that through prophet Micah was delivered to the people 700 years before Jesus. This is what the prophet Micah said in Micah chapter 5. "But you, O Bethlehem Ephratah, are only a small village among all the people of Judah. Yet, if you have a Bible, underline, yet. If you have a Bible app, highlight, yet. Yet, a ruler of Israel whose origins are in the distant past will come from you on my behalf," that is God's behalf, "and he will be the source of peace." If we want peace in the world, we look to Jesus. How did Jesus bring peace? "Yet you, Bethlehem, small, overlooked, seemingly insignificant, you will be the source of peace." Who knew? Despite how you appear, despite the story you carry, despite your place on the fault line of one of the world's most stubborn and enduring conflicts, you will be the birthplace of redemption and peace. That's not how we would have written the story. That's not the town we would have chosen. You see, this is how God works. "From you, says God, my plan will rise out of pain. It's going to break through contradiction. It's going to emerge from the very ground that everyone else has written off." Because this is how God works, bringing peace from unlikely places and salvation from the shadows and the forgotten places and the otherwise discarded people. Bethlehem Ephratah, town of hope and town of fear. It began as the town of Ephratah. It's a difficult word to translate, scholars debate it, but it seems to mean heap of ashes. Depleted of inner strength or inner worth, worthless. Jacob, one of the revered ancestors of Jesus, was born near Ephratah. His mother died in childbirth, bringing him to life. She was buried there, in Ephratah, in heap of ashes. Now, imagine giving your address as heap of ashes. Yeah, just live down the road, you know that little town over there, heap of ashes. I'm sure you want to come, name like that. Anybody would want to come? No. But have you ever thought of your address, the town you live in? Whenever you have to write it or say it or give your address, do you think about the origin of the name or the meaning? Like me, probably you don't. But this week I thought, you know, I'm just going to check it out. I live in Breslau. I wonder what Breslau means. I don't know if any of you have even heard of Breslau or if you've been through it. Usually you go by it. But Breslau means city, metropolis, urban center. Quite hilarious if you've ever been by or to Breslau. You blink and miss it. I think the person who named it did so aspirationally. Maybe it's coming one day. But it's not as hilarious as some of the towns across Canada. Don't know if you've ever visited them or Googled them. Have you ever heard of Punky Doodles Corners? It sounds kind of cute. It's only 49 minutes from here. You can get there, you know, this afternoon. Or how about Head Smashed In Buffalo Jump? Yeah? Any guesses what province that's in? Alberta. Crotch Lake, Ontario, or Crapo, PEI. That would be hard to brand if you're the tourism department of either one of those towns. Lower Economy, Nova Scotia. Come and bring your business. It's going to be great. Lower Economy. Or Dorking, Ontario. There are crazy other ones that I wasn't allowed to say. We went through in sermon rehearsal and I got cut off. So, Google it this afternoon, you'll be blown away. But unless you live in a town with a questionable or hilarious name, or in Guelph, named after a British royal family, you probably haven't given it much thought. What does the name of your town mean? But somewhere along the way, Ephrata, heap of ashes, became Bethlehem, house of bread. This little town went from ash heap to house of bread where Jesus was born, which is so poetic. It's poetic and it's prophetic because those of you who've hung around church at all or read your Bibles, you know that bread is an image that Jesus used for himself. Look at this in John 6. This is Jesus speaking. He says, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Jesus, the bread of life, entered our world in Bethlehem, the house of bread. Even in his birthplace, God is telling us a story. You see, in biblical times, bread wasn't just a side item, an optional thing, a luxury. It was the staple of life. It was simple, it was essential, it was found on every table. If you had nothing else in your pantry, you had bread on your table. Bread meant survival. It meant strength. Bread was the staple that kept people alive. So when Jesus called himself the bread of life, he wasn't offering like a spiritual snack or a religious kind of add-on or a cute analogy. He was saying, I am the one who gives life. I am the one who will sustain you. And Jesus, just as bread sustains our physical life, Jesus came to sustain our soul, to satisfy the hunger that nothing else can satisfy, and to show the way to peace and flourishing, and enough bread for all. It wasn't just about the soul, right? When we read through the Gospels, Jesus cared very much about the body. And it's such a fitting metaphor for how God works and what God loves to do, to take our ashes and turn them into bread. The very places in us that feel burned up or used up or beyond repair, the moments that seem depleted of all value, the circumstances that the world labels as worthless and unretrievable, those are the places where God just reaches in and transforms into something life-giving. God doesn't just restore. God repurposes and reshapes and redeems, gives value to. God takes our ashes and makes bread, something essential, sustaining, and necessary for life. Bethlehem Ephrata, from ashes to bread. But God is also telling another story here, because Bethlehem also means house of war. You see, at the time of Jesus' birth, Bethlehem was under foreign occupation. It still is. At the time of Jesus' birth, residents lived in the fear of empire. They still do. And at the time of Jesus' birth, its people were restricted. They still are. Have a look at this. It's a picture of the separation wall that will eventually extend 712 kilometers between Israel and the West Bank. Bethlehem is behind that wall and has 84 gates along it so far, all with militarized checkpoints, only 9 of which are open every day. You pick which ones. Who knows? Restricts commerce, restricts access to hospitals and doctors. Bethlehem is still the town of hope and fear, where hope and fear collide. So how fitting for the bread of life to be born in a house of war. What a story lies hidden here, just in this story of humanity's quest for bread, for life, our greed of hoarding the necessities of life and the luxuries of life, and the wars that that greed creates. Jesus was born under the oppressive Roman Empire, under threat of constant violence, where once again, God works through the small and the scorned and the insignificant. Bethlehem Ephrata was chosen centuries earlier as the epicenter of God's redemption story. Think about that. House of war, house of bread, heap of ashes. That's what God chose to be the epicenter of his redemption story. Heap of ashes to house of bread and house of war. See the tension, the contradiction right here embedded in the Christmas story. And as we enter Advent and as we enter this Christmas season, I love the words of Pastor Brian Zahn. They ring so true. He says, Christ is not just born in the beautiful places of our lives, as if we live in the idyllic bubble of a snow globe. Christ is also born in the war-torn places of our lives, littered with rubber bullets and tear gas canisters. Jesus wasn't born into a fairy tale, but into the world as it is. Advent gives us pause and permission to acknowledge this reality whilst holding out hope. But you, O Bethlehem Ephratah, are only a small village among all the people of Judah, yet. There's so much hanging on that little word, yet. Yet is how God works in the world, how God works in our lives. Despite the obstacles, yet God works. Despite your history, your choices, your postal code, yet God works. Despite the family you were born into or the things people have done to you, yet God works. Yet, in spite of, I think God does his best work in the midst of the yets. Every year here at Lakeside, we set aside the month of December and we embark on a giving campaign. Our tagline is less under the tree and more for the world. And each year we select an organization that brings hope and peace and rescue and joy into the darkest places. Organizations that live in the yet. And this year, we've chosen to partner with Royal City Mission in downtown Guelph. Many of you know it, you give to it, or you volunteer there. They embody God working in the small and obscure places. They have a front row seat to God transforming ashes into bread as lives are being transformed through encountering this community of the precariously housed, this community that the world would rather just not look at, not acknowledge, walk by, not make eye contact with. And they welcome them in to a warm space, not just warm as in like heated warm, but warm as in a heart's embrace. They give them a shared table. They give them dignity. And we just thought, you know what? They embody what we long to be here, what we're striving to be here, what I believe we are being here, a place of oasis and belonging. And they do this by providing lunch and dinner, over 220 meals per day, snacks and coffee all day long, laundry and shower facilities, the things we take for granted, a nice hot shower, help navigating through housing support, health care, job support. They even give them a safe place to store their belongings. Can you imagine all day long, 24 hours a day, 365 days, carrying everything you own on your back, guarding it with your life? They've given them lockers, a genuine embrace and dignity, all for $9 a day per person. $9 a day. I think a Starbucks latte, Avanti anyway, is like tax and tip, $8.38. $9 a day. They do that a lot through volunteers and donations. And next Sunday, the CEO and the pastor of Royal City Mission will be here, Kevin Coghill, and he'll be joining us to share about the impact, even on his own life, but the impact that they're having in the community and the obstacles that they face. But I just want you to have a listen to this short video. Just testimonies of two folks who have experienced this community for themselves.
Well, through the relationship I was in, I started with drugs, and when I left that relationship, came downtown without knowing where to go, and then I found other community members, which brought me to RCM.
I was a single struggling mom just after COVID. I heard about the RCM and how they do meal programs, so I started coming down here for the meal program. And eventually I used other resources.
I found support through the community, friends. I started volunteering when they first asked me if they needed help in the kitchen. And then I inquired about volunteering more, which I was able to do regularly, weekly. It gave me a sense of purpose and something to do while I was looking for a job.
Other ways I found support was the housing support. Also support just talking to other people. And I've come and got jackets and things like that if I wasn't able to afford anything else.
I was able to get a job in the kitchen at RCM, which let me help people like I was when I started coming here.
I love serving coffee and talking to people because that's what they've done for me here, and it's been an amazing thing, and I get lots of opportunities now.
The people?
The environment and the people and just the whole community.
From ashes to bread, we get to partner in that. You may have noticed when you came in the corner, there's a large manger and a tree set up. That will be a place where each week you can bring things. There are three ways that we can partner with Royal City Mission. One is to give financially. As I said, they rely heavily on donations. Give tangibly each week with practical items, little things, big things. Fair trade coffee. I forget how many cups of coffee. I'll ask Kevin next week when he's here. They go through every single day. Winter tents, and I underline winter. I'm not a camper, as you know, but apparently there's a difference between a summer tent and a winter tent. Still not appealing to me, but winter tents, they can be gently used. Sleeping bags, comforters also can be gently used. Laundry soap, new underwear, mitts, gloves, you know, the things, again, that we tend to take for granted. And then the third way is to give of our time through volunteers. And many of you, we launched Hope House downtown years ago at Lakeside. Royal City Mission and Hope House, they partner quite well together. And so they work together in this. And so if you're still giving to Hope House, please, we encourage you to keep doing that. There are always the barrels at the front door. This is just another opportunity to help in a different way. And every year, I'm just so moved by the generosity here at Lakeside. What we can do together that we can't do individually. Advent is about waiting. But it's not just about waiting idly, waiting in despair, waiting in frustration, but partnering with God in God's restoration project of turning ashes to bread. Advent is there. Because the church is not afraid to look into the dark and say, this is a dark world, but in the midst of the darkness, God happens. God happens. So can we join in that over the next month? Let's partner with Royal City Mission. As we go into this week, consider, where do you need God to break in? Where do you need God to happen? Or what walls or barriers might you be putting up, not allowing God to break in and make something happen? I'll be in the atrium again, love to chat with you. Pastors Johanna and Brian will be there. They'll be somewhere in the atrium. They'd be happy to chat about Celebrate Recovery, but about anything. Our prayer team is at the front. If you have anything on your heart, a burden you're carrying, and you'd like prayer for that, they'd be happy to pray for you. And now I just want to bless us as we go. This is a blessing from Kate Bowler. May this Advent be a new beginning as we learn to live by the light of God's coming promises, glimpsing the world through tears while also seeing something sacred shining through. Go in truth, go in light, go in hope. Go in peace. Have a great week, friends.